All right, we're going to do a quick survey before I start. And it's related to what Cliff was just talking about. How many of you think that global poverty in the last 25 years has gone up or down? We'll start with up. How many people think there is more global poverty in the world than there was 25 years ago? How many people think that there's less global poverty in the world than there was 25 years ago? Congratulations, you guys are right. Global poverty has been declining. And in fact, 1 billion people have exited poverty since the year 2000. So we are making progress. We're doing good work. This is going to sound like an odd segue. We're going to go from global poverty to interest compounding. What do these two things have to do with each other? First off, in computer science, we like to avoid exponentials. This is one we don't want to avoid. Sometimes exponentials are a good thing. This is a very simple example. It's 10% interest over 40 cycles, so for example, 40 years. You can see that your initial investment multiplies by a factor of 40 over those 40 cycles. And you might be thinking, okay, yeah, I know this stuff. But have you ever wondered what the underlying fundamental of that is? Like why banks can pay out interest that compounds over time like this? Well, it's because there's an underlying economy that increases in this way. This principle actually underlies the course of modern history for the last 200 years. So if you look here, you've got three lines. The yellow line is the number of people living under $2 a day. The red line is the number of people living under $1 a day, and the black line is the number of people living under $1.90 a day. This is inflation adjusted. This is since 1820, so this is the last 200 years. And as you can see, global poverty has been going down, not just going down a little bit, it's been going down dramatically. In 1820, 94% of people were living for under $2 a day, and that's pretty much all of you. The world is changing, and it's changing for the better. By the end of 2018, we expect that number, down at the lower left, we expect it to hit 8.6%. Why is that happening? Why have we managed to make so much progress over the last 200 years? Well, that's the Industrial Revolution. What is the Industrial Revolution? Well, we've made innovations and changes that build on each other. Each little thing increases the value of the thing before it and can be spread out into new ideas and new manufacturing processes and solving new problems. And doing that for 200 years, turns out, can be massively effective. Innovation builds on innovation step by step over the last 200 years. That is the power of compounding interest. So, why does that work? Why can we continue building ideas on ideas? And this gets back to something that Apache does. This is about community. This is about communication. This is about the free flow of information. You can't build on an idea if you haven't heard it. And this actually goes back to Cliff's project, too, with Amplio. The exchange of ideas among people striving towards a common goal is the key to innovation. Sometimes we like to point to geniuses, and we like to say this guy or that guy was so smart and took us forward so far, but the real key here is the way all of us interact with each other. In order to do that, we need to trust each other, and we need to know each other. The key words here are community and trust, and those things together is social capital. And you can use social capital to build real capital, and not only enjoy the nice things of this world, but enjoy them together with other people. Community is something we know about at Apache. You saw Bertrand's talk this morning. Community is the key. It is the guiding principle at Apache. All of the decisions the board makes go back to community over code. Which is why we keep doing it. You saw the introduction. These are the projects since 2000. We have been growing the number of projects exponentially. And projects in this case means communities. But were we talking about global poverty? So what does all this have to do with global poverty? Remember, we're trying to bring well-being to the last 8.6% of the global population. We want to bring those people out of poverty. It stands to reason that what we really want to do is to integrate those people into the global economy. And by that, I don't mean we want new consumers. We're not looking for new bars. We're not looking for cheap labor, because we've learned in our projects that each new person that comes to the table brings new ideas. They bring something that we can all benefit from. But in order for the global poor to participate fully in the global economy, they first need to be partners in their local economy. So I'm going to ask a couple more questions at this point. How many of you have taken out loans to pay for college? Me too. To pay for some other kind of investment? Yeah. How many of you are saving for retirement? All right, here's the one to see if you're paying attention. How many of you paid for your flight to Apache Con with cash? Somebody did. Wow.
I paid for Apache Con yesterday morning, $900 cash.
Most of you guys paid ahead of time, and you couldn't have done it without banking services. It sounds really banal, but it's not banal for the people who don't have it. 2.5 billion people on this planet do not have banking services. And these banking services are the key to the door for economic participation. Things like sending money, receiving money, borrowing money, saving money, all of these things are much harder to do without a bank. Things like paying for an education, or vaccines, or fertilizer, smoothing over unexpected bumps in the roads, or starting a business, these things are much harder without money transfers, savings accounts, or loans with reasonable interest rates. And this is not an easy problem. Poor people often aren't attractive customers. They can't keep a minimum balance, or they can't even afford an account fee. And they often live in places that are off the beaten track, that are hard to reach, and have minimal infrastructure. But fortunately, they have communities. And banking isn't magic. Underlying banking has some simple principles. So what does community banking look like? CARE is actually working on something called savings groups. Savings groups is community lending by the community for the community. More concretely, more specifically, what is a savings group? Well, a group of people gets together, they get themselves a box like this one here. It usually has 2 or 3 locks on it, and they get themselves a ledger. And they get together, and they think about how they want to conduct their savings group. They make some rules. They elect a treasurer. They decide who's going to keep the keys to the box. And all of them put a little bit of money into the box. And nobody has to be rich to be able to do this. They just need to have a little bit of money that they can put into this box. And then they meet every week. And every week, they save a little bit more money. But they don't just save. They get together, and they decide what they're going to do with that money. So maybe there's somebody in the community who's starting a business. Or maybe there's somebody in the community who has a sick child and needs to take some time off in order to take care of that sick child. So they can go, and they can say, well, you're starting a business. We can give you a loan with this interest rate so that you can buy the things that you need to build up this business. And you can pay us back before the end of the cycle. Or we can say, we know that you're having trouble with your sick child. We can give you an interest-free loan to help you bridge this difficult time. And at the end of that time period, it can be a half a year or a year, the group decides. They get together, they see how much people paid in, and they split the money that's in the box back out among the people who paid in. And they decide who gets how much money based on how much people paid in. So this is where the ledger comes in. They can also decide if they want to go for another round. Because the people seeking these loans are seeking it from people they know, the people who are in the savings group know if the people are creditworthy. They don't need any extra information beyond what they already know. This is called in the banking industry KYC, know your customer. No Equifax necessary. Because the savings group only gets its money back if the borrowers can repay, the community has an extra incentive to help these businesses succeed. It goes beyond just making sure that the interest terms are reasonable. It also goes on to material help. They can give them advice. They can buy at those stores. They have an incentive not to go to the next town to get whatever it is they're looking for. And the people starting these businesses also have an incentive to be open to their communities about the challenges they're facing so that they can be helped. Savings groups can also decide where they're going to put the money based on the interest of the community as a whole. So they can look for those long-term investments that bring them forward as a community the best. Because as Cliff pointed out before, these communities have a great deal of native intelligence and knowledge about their problems. They're the ones that are best able to make decisions about what they need. Savings groups are also transparent. So the amount of money that each person pays in is recorded on a ledger. And that ledger is available to be looked at by everybody in the savings group. The money in the box is only looked at, or the box is only opened when everybody is there together. That's why there's multiple locks on the box. And all of the decisions are made with everybody present. So communities that are building savings groups are building more than just physical capital, which is important. They're also building social capital. They're putting themselves in a position to profit as a community from this principle of compounding interest. These ideas aren't new. Savings groups have existed in one form or another for over 2,000 years. This idea actually came out of Africa. There is a word in over 100 languages for savings groups. So, for example, tandas in Latin America, chama in Swahili, susu in the Caribbean. What I'm describing here is a specific form of savings groups that's being spread by the group called CARE. And CARE has been building on those previous innovations and refining them. CARE started their work in the early 90s. And they've been steadily developing the method ever since. There's also been research by another group called the SEEP Network. They've been looking into how effective the savings groups are. That research was funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And what they found is that savings groups increase asset ownership without decreasing the amount of people that money spend. They found that savings groups increase food security. They increase the amount of money that people spend on primary education. And the effects over the short time period, and they measured over 2 years, are fairly small, but they're measurable. And we just talked about how small effects can add up on top of each other and compound over time. There's also another similar idea called joint liability groups. And this is an idea that got its start in India. Unlike savings groups, joint liability groups often involve banks or something called a microfinance institution, sometimes involving a field agent from a bank. Banks give little loans, in the case of joint liability groups, little loans to a person in a community. That person in the community shows that they can pay it back by gathering the community around them, and everybody in the community together says, yes, that person is trustworthy. You can lend to that person. They're basically using their social capital as a form of collateral. Just as in the case of savings groups, people can use these loans to make long-term investments, to build up businesses, which will then help them exit poverty. And the Grameen Foundation has found that less than 1%, or the credit rate off for these loans is 1%, and the average overdue rate is between 3 and 6%. So this widely held belief that poor people are not the best people to loan money to, this is not true. Poor people can be creditworthy. There's also a concern that poor people, that it could be abusive to loan money to poor people. The Grameen Foundation has found that microfinance can, in fact, lift people out of poverty. Those that remained Grameen Foundation customers over a course of at least 5 years, of those, 55% exited poverty. And because of the tremendous amount of good that this idea does, the Grameen Foundation, or rather the Grameen Bank, together with Mohamed Yunus, received the Nobel Peace Prize in 2004 for this groundbreaking work. So I've been going on here about community and banking, but you may be wondering at this point what this has to do with you, because we're here at an open source conference, right? Well, what I've been describing has a lot to do, a lot in common with the Apache Way. It's charitable. When savings groups make sure that their members can get through hard times with interest-free loans or even absorb those costs if the people fail to pay back the loans, then they are making sure that the weakest in their community are not left behind. It's community-centered. People are getting together in their savings groups as a community. Sometimes somebody from outside, a field agent, comes in to educate them, but the decisions are theirs. They decide who's the treasurer, and they decide what the rules are, and they decide who to lend money to. The community sets the direction and makes all of the decisions. And they make those decisions based on consensus. They decide together who is creditworthy. They decide together who will help lead their groups. Savings groups are meritocratic. So when they decide who will be their treasurer, when they decide who they want to lend money to, they do so based on their knowledge of these people, their knowledge of their merit in this system. And savings groups and joint liability groups are transparent. Remember I said they keep all of their records on a ledger that everybody can look at. They only open the box when everybody's together so that everybody knows, everybody has all of the information about what the savings group is doing and what it has. This transparency promotes trust, and the trust is what makes the collaboration possible. And savings groups are pragmatic. We're talking about a group of people who doesn't have time to mess around with exotic ideas or strange directions. They're going to focus on the problems they have and solving those problems. And in doing so, they also focus on the social bonds that they need in order to reach these goals. Now you see, this is the Apache Way, and if you'd like to learn more about the Apache Way, you can either visit this website here, or you can go to the talks on Thursday that are in Viger B. There's a community track going on Thursday about the Apache Way. But savings groups and joint liability groups share more than just culture with the open source communities. Because software can be used to support these processes, to keep community records and to do interest calculations, we can support these communities ourselves as one community to another. And this is where my project comes in. I'm working on a project called Apache FinnerAct. At Apache FinnerAct, we do exactly that. We create software to support joint liability groups, and we're moving in the direction of supporting savings groups as well. Our project relies on your projects. And you see, I've listed a handful of the projects that we're using. These are all open source projects. And I'm sure there's at least one person and probably many people in this room who have contributed to these projects, directly or indirectly. So when you're working on your project and you're scratching your own itch because you have a problem that you want to solve, but you're doing it in an open and generous way, you're also helping people you may not realize that you're helping. And Apache Finneract started at the Grameen Foundation under the name MIFOS, and it's made its way to the Apache Software Foundation, first in incubation in 2015, and then we made it to a top-level project in 2017. So we're one of the younger projects at Apache. And if you want to learn more about Finneract and MIFOS, or FinTech, we have a track today on FinTech that's going on in VigerB. I'll be there. I hope I can see you there as well. So you all here at ApacheCon, you're here because you belong to a community. You have know-how that you want to share, and you have questions that you want to get answered. You have ideas, and you have puzzles that you may be thinking about. I hope that you can talk to each other, exchange your ideas, explain your puzzles, work through your questions in the talks and on the hallway track. And as you do that, remember, the best communities reach out to other communities and help them. And for that, I wanted to say thank you.